I'm thoroughly convinced nobody can play the air guitar like me. Not in studio, anyways.
All right,
but, you know.
I'll let you have that one. The only time I think I've ever really seen it is in the TV show Scrubs, where they have the air band. Remember that one with Donald Faison in the group?
Great show, man.
I love that show.
I kind of feel like Scrubs is very underrated.
Feel like the actors in it were underrated. You don't see them in much anymore.
Very true.
Sarah Chalk, I believe, is in Sid Marty, but not Sid Marty. What's the one with, Al keeps telling us about it. The one that Dan Harmon does. Something.
Well.
She's a voice in it.
I don't know. Al's not here, though.
He's not.
We decided to give Al the week off again. But have no fear, because we're about to get our weekly Hollywood fix with Michael Warschauer, who's joining us for the second week in a row. Michael, we appreciate the time as always, my friend. How are you?
Doing good. Thanks for having me back, guys.
Well, let's talk about something that hasn't come out yet. I went to see Atomic Blonde over the weekend, and I thought it was pretty good. Actually, you know, from a purely a dude perspective, we saw a lot of Charlize Theron. I mean, holy cow.
Like Reindeer Games Charlize Theron, or what are we talking here?
Holy
All right,
cow,
nice.
Man. I was surprised, and I was pleasantly surprised, we'll put it that way. But it was pretty good. But the previews, but there were some ones in there that were okay, but there was one with a wow factor. This new Kingsman movie. And Michael, I want to start with that, because that trailer blew me away. And I think I was even more blown away by the star power. It's very rare that a sequel is better than the original. But again, the cast of this one certainly has me thinking. Have you heard anything about this new Kingsman movie?
Yeah, you know, the good buzz so far coming out of Comic-Con just a few weeks ago has been really great. And this was a movie that really started as, or a franchise rather, that started with the first movie a couple of years ago that was kind of an underdog and really performed a lot better at the box office than anyone expected. So with that really nice bump from the box office the first time around, they really apparently have gotten a chance to kind of polish up a little bit, have a little more confidence, and really bolster their cast. So joining Taron Egerton and Colin Firth and Mark Strong is kind of a murderer's row of Julianne Moore, Channing Tatum, Jeff Bridges, and Halle Berry. So it's an incredible cast. And like I said, the early buzz, they showed some clips to some fans at Comic-Con that got really great feedback and good reviews from everyone there. So this is certainly something I'm very excited to see. I know sequels frequently don't live up to their predecessor, but there's a few exceptions. For every bad sequel, you get maybe a Dark Knight or a Spider-Man 2 or something like that. So I'm hoping it falls into that category and really kind of carries the really great stuff from the first movie into the second one.
Show today's kind of carried on sort of a comic theme. You mentioned it was presented at Comic-Con. We were speaking about the upcoming Comic-Con here, the Northeast Ohio Comic-Con coming to North Olmsted Sunday, August 20th. But that is, that's one of the lesser known sort of, was it a graphic novel or a comic book out there people didn't really know about? And then, like you said, the movie came out. First off, Colin Firth is amazing in this movie. I didn't think he could beat people up like that. And then here he is doing it. To go from Mamma Mia to this, that's fascinating.
It's quite a turnaround, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, vastly different, there's no question. And I want to switch from that to something else that really kind of got destroyed this weekend. Boy, Dark Tower, about 6 weeks ago, when the trailers first came out, people were thinking, wow, this certainly has potential, but boy, the critics just annihilated this thing. Now, it did okay at the box office. It didn't do poorly. I mean, it did all right, but boy, people who saw this thing just kicked it aside. Did you see it?
I have not seen it, but I've talked to a couple of friends of mine who are big Stephen King fans and big movie fans in general, and kind of the consensus I got from them and from reading reviews is that basically what the filmmakers did was take this massive 8-part series that a lot of people consider to be like Stephen King's magnum opus, and they tried to jumpstart it into a major franchise with this movie and then some TV series and more films subsequently. And what really ended up happening is they took these really massive, deep, complex books and turned them into very broad 90-minute movie. And so I think that there were a lot of plot holes from what I understand, and really they took a lot of the nuance that was in these like really well-beloved books and just took it out completely. There was a lot of rumors about them re-editing the movie just a few weeks before it came out. And it also, the studio held it from critics to review it until about 24 hours before it premiered, which is usually a sign that they know the movie's not going to do very well. They're trying to hold off the negative press as long as they can. And unfortunately, that didn't really help too much with Dark Tower. But it is hard to live up to expectations, again, just first of all being a Stephen King adaptation, but then one that took over 10 years of development to get from the page to the screen. And when you think about all the other really great Stephen King adaptations out there, The Shining, Carrie, Shawshank Redemption, it's kind of hard to meet those expectations. So certainly a disappointment, it sounds like, but also one that probably could have been avoided with really a better movie.
Of course, Stephen King, he's doing up big time right now. He's got Dark Tower out. He's got It coming out here fairly soon as well. And I know a lot of people are still really excited about that. Do you think what happened with Dark Tower could possibly hurt what's coming out with It?
I don't think so. I think the early buzz about It has been really fantastic. I think if anybody who has seen the trailer and seen the original series that was produced back in the 80s will know that this is pretty faithful and looks pretty fantastic. I know I saw the trailer for it at another movie a few weeks ago, and saw several people in the theater jump out of their seats when the clown first appeared. So I think it's going to do better. I think the horror genre is usually a lot friendlier to Stephen King adaptations. So I'm keeping my expectations up for that so far.
Yeah. Nothing against Tim Curry, but Pennywise looks a whole lot scarier in this rendition of It this time around. The one thing I will say that worries me about It is that second 2 hours of the original made-for-TV film kind of drug on, got a little boring. I'll say, do you hear that from people, or are people thinking this stays a little truer to the novel, which, from what I understand, was different than that original TV movie?
Yeah, what I've been hearing is that this one is definitely closer to the original novel. So while it has a lot of those great classic moments that came from the series, it also kind of goes in its own direction as it moves on. So it'll be interesting to see if they stick the landing there with the second half of it. But from everything I've heard, the early buzz is very positive and really created a new great adaptation of this already beloved book and series.
We're talking with Michael Warschauer, our Hollywood insider here on Bullseye on the Afternoon. And last week, we were talking a little bit about the movie Detroit, and it got out to a pretty nice start. But then really, it kind of faded over the course of the weekend. It got out to such a nice start in select theaters. But why was it, do you think, that over the course of the weekend, when it really opened up nationwide, that it just didn't do as well as expected?
Well, this is a pretty interesting case with Detroit. It had a lot of things going on in a whole different area, bunch of areas with it. It got generally pretty positive reviews and is still really kind of considered one of the early Oscar contenders, at least at this point in the late summer, with still several months to go. But one of the first problems they hit was it kind of hit some controversy and had some backlash from critics and scholars when it came out. The biggest issue is that there's a lot of people that are upset about a white director interpreting the civil rights movement. And I've not yet seen the film, so I can't quite comment on that. And I know that's a larger conversation, but I think that really kind of hindered the general conversation about the film this weekend. The other thing is that the studio that put this movie out, Annapurna Pictures, they've been doing a great job of buying really fantastic indie movies over the past few years and had some success come Oscar season. But this is their first time where they've fully distributed a movie for wide release. And a lot of people, Hollywood people, are saying that maybe they did it a little too early, that rather than kind of pushing it through festivals and smaller release so that it builds a good word of mouth and good buzz and kind of builds into Oscar season, they might have had a little more success out the gate. They did release it, I think, this weekend to coincide with the anniversary of the Detroit riots depicted in the film. So they kind of maybe rushed their release strategy. But the one interesting thing that I kept seeing was that polls of people at theaters over the weekend were coming out unanimously positive, that the audiences that went to go see it loved it. So I would expect it to have that good word of mouth kind of carry it over the next couple of weeks and sort of see its numbers grow a little bit more steadily as we get closer into the fall and closer into the beginnings of the real Oscar race.
Fair enough. And look, to be fair to Detroit also, it wasn't like the box office in general killed it this weekend. So I don't think that it was just a standalone movie that just didn't do well. We talked about how The Dark Tower got annihilated by critics. It also didn't do great. But regardless, I want to throw this the direction of my tag team partner. I've got to, because you asked about this earlier, and I figured, you know what? I'll bet you Michael could probably answer this question for us. Now, they've made about as many of these stupid Sharknado movies as they have those ridiculous Fast and Furious disasters. So I'll let Matt ask you this question about Sharknado 704, whatever it is.
Yeah, I think there was the fifth one last night, which was surprising to me. I didn't realize they'd done a fourth one. But these things, I think, come out every single summer. First question I got to ask you, Mike, is how do they keep making these things? Like, who's putting money into these to keep putting these out?
Well, you know, there I ask myself the same question every year. But obviously they keep bringing them back. I think that they are they're kind of cult favorites. They're really kind of they're cheaply made movies that they put out one a year. It's easy to do. It usually will end up being cheaper than an extended miniseries or another series on Sci-Fi. And they get to make a whole event out of it. This week they're doing a Sharknado Week where they're showing all five of the movies and then another one. I think I saw. And so they really like make it this big event, and it's goofy. And every time you kind of get to talk about what B-list celebrities are making cameos and getting eaten by sharks. So it's always kind of fun, and they usually kind of attract a young audience, a lot of college kids, high school students, that kind of thing. And they lean into the camp and the silliness of it, and it's apparently done pretty well for Sci-Fi.
Here's my other question for you, Mike. We were talking about this in the office earlier today, these Sci-Fi movies. Nothing against them. I actually find myself enjoying them, from Sharktopus to Mega Shark versus Sharkigator or whatever they call these things anymore. But I've seen American Pie. I've seen 90210. I've seen, I'm trying to think, Billy Baldwin was in one, and it was just absolutely horrendous to watch him acting up there. But I've seen The Usual Suspects, and he's fantastic in that movie. I don't understand what happens in these movies that these actors, who are pretty decent actors, I mean, Tara Reid was good in American Pie in the sequel. I think
she was Bunny Lebowski, the big Lebowski.
Yeah, well, that too. I mean, and she can act. I don't understand why it doesn't continue on into these shark. Is it the director? Is it the editing? Is it just what they have to work with? Are they just trying to get the job done and go home for the day? What's going on with those?
I think it's probably the last one. I think that it's sort of a situation where everybody involved knows this movie is supposed to be ridiculous. I don't think anybody is going to look at Sharknado as anything somewhat serious. So they really have an opportunity to kind of lean into it. And for someone like Tara Reid, who has had really a rough couple of years as far as doing like really big name, big movies. It's a chance to kind of come out and take center stage again and take advantage of an opportunity. And, I think that most everyone involved seems to be having fun for the most part.
Well, before we get to your picks to click, Michael, I want to ask you about a little piece of news that came out earlier today. Oh, yeah. You know, let me tell you, I couldn't sleep last night thinking about this. It's slightly bigger than the 17th Sharknado that Douglas watched last night, but Chris Pratt, Anna Faris splitting apart. That was the big Hollywood news. It was the big Hollywood gossip that released earlier this morning, late last night. Explain to the listeners why that's such a huge deal. I mean, I really didn't realize that they were as big of a deal as they were, but why is that split getting so much attention?
I think the biggest part of it is that the two of them are really likable performers and have been in some really fantastic things the last couple of years. Anna Faris has her hit show Mom, which has been on for several seasons. And, of course, Chris Pratt is one of the biggest movie stars in the world right now. So they have a large following sort of separately. And Really, in Hollywood today, it's just as important for actors to have kind of their own personal brand as it is for them to perform well in the movies that they're in. And the two of them have really built a good brand around their being a couple and their relationship. So I think it was very surprising to a lot of us that, you know, we obviously have no idea what they're like in private, what their relationship is like. So it's kind of shocking when you have this one sort of picture out in the world of this sort of perfect, beautiful Hollywood couple to sort of have it abruptly end like that. But I don't think it'll really affect the two of them career-wise. I think they're both really well-established and pretty successful and, like I said earlier, pretty beloved for what they do already. So it's certainly sad for the fans, but I think in the end, career-wise, I don't see much of an impact for it.
Wasn't it just like 2 months ago, though, Chris Pratt was getting a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame, and he was talking about, oh, I wouldn't be here without my wife, Anna Faris, and I love you so much, Bug. And then here we find out, apparently, they're actors. That's what they were doing.
doing a good job of it, yeah.
Give them an Oscar.
They're paid, in many cases, millions for a reason, because they can convince you that there's something that maybe they really aren't on the surface.
Could be a new category. Is it the Oscar right there? You say, hey, real-life acting.
That's right. All right, Michael. Well, we need your picks to click for this week, my friend. You gave us some pretty good ones last week. What do you have for us this week?
Well, there's a lot more good stuff this week. If you're like me and you've spent the whole summer wondering what Saturday Night Live would be doing about the current news cycle, you have your chance on Thursday night. They'll come back for a special weekend update, summer edition, with the host Colin Jost and Michael Che. And so that will be on NBC Thursday night at 10. Also, Get Shorty, a new TV adaptation of Elmore Leonard's crime comedy that was originally a movie with John Travolta and Danny DeVito, is getting the series treatment with Chris O'Dowd from Bridesmaids and Ray Romano. That will be on Epix starting on Sunday night at 10. As far as movies, this week is kind of a quiet week at the box office. Probably the biggest release is going to be Annabelle Creation. I think it's a prequel to the Annabelle series of horror films, and it's actually getting pretty positive reviews so far. But if you're looking for something a little more out there, a little bit different, I would recommend going to see The Trip to Spain. It's the third in a series of films starring Steve Coogan and Rob Brydon, where they're these two British guys who go on these culinary trips where they just go to different places to eat, and they end up having these long conversations where they end up insulting each other quite a bit and, of course, doing celebrity impressions, which are always fantastic. They really kind of made their name for doing a fantastic Michael Caine impression a couple years ago. So if you're interested in seeing some of that, I would definitely recommend checking out The Trip to Spain.
The Trip to Spain sounds like it's right up my alley. I may try and check that one out this weekend. I love that review you just gave it, so that might be on the list for the weekend. Michael, always a pleasure, my friend. We appreciate you stopping by, giving us some of your time and your insight as well. Well, I'll tell you what, Al Harris may have to go on a little bit longer of a vacation. We have to bring you back again for next week.
Thanks. Anytime.
All righty. That's Michael Warshauer, our Hollywood insider, joining us here on Bullseye on the Afternoon.